A new state report says Twin Cities minorities with mental retardation are more likely to be institutionalized than their white counterparts and are less likely to get more desirable home-based services. The report is consistent with studies in other states that have found minorities with developmental disabilities get poor treatment compared with their white counterparts. In the first of two reports, Minnesota Public Radio's John Bewin examines the case of an African-American mother who charges that her mentally retarded son was mistreated and permanently damaged by the state social service system.
Melina Talley has a large photograph of herself and her four children taken in 1988, 3 years after the family moved from Chicago to Minneapolis. The four children surround their proud, smiling mother. The youngest of Mrs. Talley's three boys, Dion, was 16 at the time, but looks younger in the picture. He wears a wide-open grin, his hand on his mother's shoulder. Dion was declared mentally retarded at birth. He has the IQ of a two-year-old. Dion's school records support Melina Talley's recollection that Dion was a healthy, happy child who spoke in short sentences.
He was a playful person. He liked to play. He was able to talk to you and let you know what he wanted, what he didn't want. He could take a shower, you know, and brush his teeth, tap his shoes. He could write his name, and he could count to at least 10.
Talley worries it's a different Dion who will move in with her in a couple of weeks after 6 years in state institutions. Mrs. Talley moved from Chicago to Minneapolis back in 1985, partly, she says, to escape the violence of Chicago's Cabrini-Green public housing project, and partly because she'd heard Minnesota had good programs for mentally retarded children.
I thought I came up here to give my children a better life, but now it seems like I should have stayed there. I'd rather dodge bullets than see what's going to happen to my son.
Dion Talley is now 24. He's spent most of the last 5 years at the Cambridge Regional Human Services Center, an hour north of the Twin Cities. On a recent morning, he sat in a chair against a wall in a bright break room at the facility, moaning incomprehensibly and snapping his jaws. Staff and other residents chatted nearby. Staff at the treatment center get visibly nervous at the sight of Melina Talley and the two reporters she's brought along. Mrs. Talley has had an antagonistic relationship with Cambridge staff, as with many other state and county officials, for as long as her son has been in their care. Mrs. Talley is angry about Dion's treatment in state institutions, and she's angry that Dion ever entered state care. On this day, she demands to know how long her son has been like this, as she puts it. A young staff member agrees with her that in the past year, Dion has lost his ability to recognize people and to talk.
I know what you're talking about, because like Charlie thought last winter, last spring, 95, and he really, he knew who we were, he could have a conversation. I would say probably since the summer, he's probably been
Mrs. Talley finally challenges Michael Moss, the Cambridge facility's chief operating officer. With reporters present, Moss declines to discuss Dion's condition.
Why does he slow down?
I cannot comment on individual client cases.
I'm going to go.
Dion Talley suffers from two conditions now that he didn't have during 18 years in his mother's care. His doctors now consider him mentally ill, and he has a condition called tardive dyskinesia, an inability to control the movements of his face and limbs. Tardive dyskinesia is caused by prolonged use of neuroleptic drugs, a type used for mental illness or psychotic behavior. State and county officials declined to talk about the Talley case, citing legal complaints filed by Mrs. Talley. Dion's care was under state control for several years in the early 1990s. When Melina Talley regained control 2 years ago, she ordered a stop to the neuroleptic drugs that gave Dion tardive dyskinesia. University of Minnesota psychiatrist Ronald Hardrick joined Dion's medical team as a consultant in 1994. He says tardive dyskinesia is usually permanent.
There are a number of treatments that have been postulated to have effect on reversing some of the symptoms of tardive dyskinesia. but there's clearly no consistent treatment for this condition that beyond really early management, early recognition, and oftentimes discontinuing the neuroleptic.
At the request of Cambridge officials, Dr. Hardrick declined to talk about Dion Talley's case. But in a letter last year, Hardrick argued doctors had used antipsychotic drugs for several years with few signs they were doing any good. He says in the past, antipsychotics were commonly used as tranquilizers, but the current practice is to use other approaches unless a specific mental illness warrants the use of antipsychotics. In a 1993 report, a Cambridge pharmacist wrote Dion had been drugged for chemical restraint and that, quote, little, if any, effective behavior management programs were used. Michael Moss, the COO of the Cambridge Treatment Center and a licensed psychologist, wouldn't comment on Dion's case but said state regulations prohibit over-medication. And Moss says heavy use of drugs would work against the center's goal of helping residents learn job skills.
When we start talking about work and we start talking about doing things, people who are over-medicated don't do that very well. And so it detracts from our ability to work with people and to get them to change.
Since he entered state care, Dion Talley has clearly been a difficult, often violent patient. And doctors say some patients are so sick and hard to control, there's no alternative to using drugs that may do permanent damage. But Melina Talley says if her son were so out of control that he needed antipsychotic drugs, then institutions made him that way. By all accounts, Dion showed no aggression until he was in state care. That doesn't prove state doctors made Dion sicker. A national expert on mental retardation and mental illness told NPR the natural onset of mental illness often happens as the patient reaches adulthood. In any case, Melina Talley's anger is fueled by the fact that she never agreed to the use of drugs and never wanted Dion institutionalized in the first place.
I never knew it was a Cambridge, knew nothing about a Cambridge until they sent him there. And I never intended for my sons to go anywhere. Then I broke my ankle last year.
Melina Talley herself is disabled with severe asthma and emphysema. She lives on Social Security. She recently bought a small house in a poor South Minneapolis neighborhood.
This is a bedroom here. The bathroom, 2 inches to it.
In addition to 24-year-old Dion, another of Tally's four children, 25-year-old James, also has mild mental retardation. James has a room upstairs in his mother's house. He's a tall young man with a mischievous smile. Melina and James recall happier times when Dion was home.
He didn't know the value of money, but he always wanted $5. His favorite words were $5, wasn't it, James?
Uh-huh. What was it?
He was his favorite word was $10.
$10?
Talley says she always intended to care for both of her disabled sons in her own home. But by the time the family moved to Minneapolis, James and Dion were growing teenagers, and they began wandering into the city without her. Melina's asthma had gotten worse. She couldn't keep up with her sons, and they started getting into trouble.
They play with little kids, and the parents didn't want them playing with their little kids because they were so much bigger. But the bigger kids didn't accept them because they was retarded, and they would jump on them and fight them. So they just wouldn't fit.
Talley says her sons also had run-ins with police who approached them on the streets and didn't understand they were disabled when the boys didn't respond normally or ran away. In the late 80s, Melina repeatedly asked Hennepin County case manager Kevin McLean for help with her sons. She says McLean told her if she wanted more services, she'd have to place James and Dion in institutions. Mrs. Talley now says McLean failed to steer her to available options, such as the Personal Care Attendant Program, which provides help for disabled people in their homes. Kevin McLean was replaced as Dion Talley's case manager a couple of years ago. He refused to comment on the case on the advice of Hennepin County attorneys. In 1990, Melina Talley reluctantly placed her sons in separate state-funded institutions for the mentally retarded, both of them near her home in Minneapolis. Things went reasonably well for James. Dion, the more severely retarded younger brother, started a downward spiral. Records show Dion had trouble expending his considerable energy in a confined place. Horseplay escalated into aggression. He repeatedly ran from the institution, usually turning up at his mother's house. Melina Talley says Dion did not respond well to the institution's restraint methods because he'd been raised in dangerous urban neighborhoods, and Melina had taught him to fight back when attacked.
When I would take Dion back, he would run from them, and he would try to respond to them, and they called the police, and the police, a man, handled him again. I asked them, could he come home? And they told me no, because I wasn't capable of keeping him. He was a threat to me and the community.
Doctors soon turned to medication as a way of calming Dion. His behavior turned more violent. He started kicking, biting, and throwing chairs at staff. In early 1990, a doctor had described Dion as a healthy 18-year-old in no distress. After a year in institutions and several violent outbursts, he was diagnosed with intermittent explosive disorder and possibly major depression. Ella Gross was an advocate with the nonprofit Ark of Hennepin County. She first met a heavily medicated Dion in a hospital psych ward.
He was incoherent. He was, slurring, very glassy-eyed, and it was almost a breaking of his spirit. When I met him, his spirit was broken.
The handling of Dion Talley seems oddly out of place at a time when state policy is to keep families together whenever possible, to move the disabled out of state hospitals, and to minimize the use of antipsychotic drugs. In the spring of 1991, Dion was committed to the State Regional Treatment Center in Cambridge. Melina Talley opposed the commitment, but by this time she had no say in the matter. Dion had turned 18 and the state had taken control of his affairs. Hennepin County case manager Kevin McLean sought and received conservatorship powers over Dion. Public conservatorships are rare in recent times. They're usually only allowed when no close relatives are willing or able to take on the role. Melina Talley says that wasn't so in the case of her and Dion.
Okay, I had him. I'm the mother. And I took care of him from birth until that time. I wasn't offered the guardianship, and I was asking for the guardianship.
The state's 1990 petition for public conservatorship admitted Dion Talley's mother had indicated that she would like to become his conservator, but said Mrs. Talley had initiated no action to accomplish this on her own behalf. Melina Talley says she tried to claim guardianship, but did not understand the need for a lawyer and an official petition. She says she attended the conservatorship hearing after getting a notice about it and was surprised to find the court designating Kevin McLean her son's conservator. DFL State Senator Linda Berglund of Minneapolis looked into Dion's case at Melina Talley's request.
The county should not have removed that child from the home without offering them services, and they should have made every effort to reunite the child with the parents. And they should have offered services to that child to stay out of an institutional setting. These are all things that are required in statute, in different parts of the statute.
Berglund says she has no evidence that race was a factor in the Talley case, but Berglund asked the Department of Human Services to examine whether minorities with developmental disabilities are treated differently in the Minnesota system. Studies elsewhere around the country have found minorities are treated differently. They're more likely to be diagnosed with schizophrenia, they're given higher doses of antipsychotic drugs, and they're more likely to be institutionalized. A study last year found young African-American men were the only demographic group whose numbers were not declining in state hospitals across the country. Melina Talley believes Hennepin County case manager Kevin McLean discriminated against her and her son. And she says McLean's successor, County Case Manager Clarence Bischoff, acknowledged as much in a conversation with her.
Clarence told me that they recognized that Kevin McLean just was prejudiced on the issues. That's why how my life got so corrupted.
Clarence Bischoff declined to comment. The head of the Hennepin County Developmental Disabilities Division, Mary Barstad, also refused to discuss the Talley case, but read a prepared statement.
It is the policy and the practice of Hennepin County not to discriminate against the persons it serves. The division believes any inquiry concerning the case in question will arrive at this conclusion.
Researchers who've looked at the disparities in treatment of minorities with developmental disabilities say willful discrimination may not be the best explanation. One study in Tennessee found doctors perceived black patients as being more violent than whites who showed similar behavior. Dion Talley was committed on the grounds that he was dangerous, but after his mother's relentless efforts to bring him home, doctors acknowledge he can live in the community with the proper support system. He's never seriously hurt anyone. Melina Talley's attorney, Sonia Kerr, says professionals in the overwhelmingly white social service system look at Dion, a young black man about 6 feet tall and 170 pounds, and see a threat.
This one meeting we had, this was just recently, the last time we were there, and the comment from the county people was, Dion is a big black boy. I said, excuse me, you mean he's tall? And the implication there is this racial undertone of, you know, big black boy, you better not let him out.
Melina Talley says race has also played a role in her relationship with social service workers. Talley thinks officials marked her as unfit for county programs because she's a black single mother who moved to Minneapolis from Chicago. State and county officials never made a case that Mrs. Talley was unfit to care for Dion, but there are signs that some in the system saw her that way. Back in 1990, when Dion was wandering away from his mother's home, a doctor concluded the young man was being neglected by his family and leading an unstructured life on the streets of Minneapolis. At the time, Melina Talley was telling Hennepin County workers she was too sick to manage her sons. Former ARC Hennepin advocate Ella Gross sat in on meetings where Dion Talley's care was discussed in the early 90s. She says Mrs. Talley was often surrounded by 20 or 25 professionals, most of them white, and was routinely ignored. Gross says that fed Mrs. Talley's mistrust of the system, which in turn worked against her.
She was perceived as a hysterical person because she couldn't contain herself in meetings, and she'd break down and cry, and she'd accuse people of being racist right in a meeting. And, you know, for Minnesota nice individuals, it just wasn't something that they could get used to. Whether there was racism or whether there wasn't racism, there clearly was some injustices done to her.
Hey, Dion, taking your picture. Smile, Dion.
If all goes according to plan, Melina Talley will take Dion home from Cambridge in a couple of weeks. Mrs. Talley regained conservatorship of Dion in 1994, only to find the state had gotten a civil commitment order to keep him at Cambridge. Since then, it's taken her two more years to get Dion's release and services arranged in her home. Dion's home care services will cost taxpayers less than the $350 a day price tag at Cambridge. Talk to any observer of government programs for the mentally retarded, and they'll tell you most people working in the system perform a difficult job with competence and compassion. State officials express pride that the bad old days are mostly gone, when thousands of mentally retarded people were warehoused and drugged against their will. But few will claim those days are gone entirely. Advocates for the retarded say state programs are complicated, bureaucratic, and underfunded. Roosevelt Perkins has worked with disabled people for almost 30 years in several states. He's now the only black staff member in the Minnesota Ombudsman's Office for Mental Health and Mental Retardation. Perkins says families like the Talleys are at great risk of getting trampled by the system.
Even whites with mental health issues, and in some areas of mental retardation too, they're quote-unquote falling through the cracks. And if white middle class with mental health issues and mental retardation are falling through the cracks, historically, where will a minority fall? He won't even reach the crack, will he?
Melina Talley hopes to help other minority families see that they don't fall through the cracks. She recently got licensed to be an advocate for developmentally disabled people. With reporting help from Dan Olson, I'm John Bewin, Minnesota Public Radio News.
New statistics released this week are fueling concern that the Minnesota system for people with mental retardation and other developmental disabilities does not serve minorities fairly. The report says minorities are admitted disproportionately to a state hospital and are more likely than whites to be on waiting lists for the more sought-after home care services. In part two of our series, Minnesota Public Radio's John Bewin reports the findings are consistent with those in other states.
In its study, the Department of Human Services found 20% of recent admissions to the Cambridge Regional Treatment Center were minorities. That's more than twice the minority population in the region of southeastern Minnesota, including the Twin Cities, that the Cambridge facility serves. 60% of all new admissions to the state hospital system are now going to Cambridge. Minnesota's other five state hospitals don't keep statistics by race. The DHS study also found that across the state, minorities with developmental disabilities are more likely than whites to be on waiting lists for community-based group homes or in-home services, the kind designed to keep people out of state hospitals. DFL State Senator Linda Berglund of Minneapolis, who asked for the report, says she finds its results disturbing.
This would tend to imply that minority persons at the county level are not being provided the services they need to stay in the community, which is the intention of the legislature. And secondly, because of that, they are being admitted to the regional treatment centers.
Laura Doyle of the State Human Services Department says the report indicates the state and county systems do need to reach out more effectively to minorities, but she says those working in the system are trying. The report found that minority children in Minnesota are more likely to be getting services for the developmentally disabled than our white kids.
That may tell us that some of our outreach efforts, our early intervention efforts, our referrals from hospitals, doctors, and educational systems are working better than they have in the past.
But State Senator Berglund says the higher presence of minority children in the system may not be good news. She says it might reflect that black, Hispanic, and Indian children are more likely to live in poverty and thus be exposed to lead poisoning and other environmental factors that lead to developmental disabilities.
Kids literally have their IQs robbed from them when they are exposed to high levels of lead. And I have cases of, in my district, where children have literally become mentally retarded because of the environmental factors.
The report suggesting that minorities with developmental disabilities do not fare as well as whites in Minnesota is consistent with findings elsewhere. Studies in New York, Ohio, Tennessee, California, and the National VA hospital system have turned up similar results. William Lawson is a professor of psychiatry at the University of Arkansas and author of several studies on the treatment of minorities with mental illness.
African-American patients are more likely to be involuntarily admitted. They're more likely to be misdiagnosed with a more severe diagnosis. More likely to receive higher doses of medication. And occasional studies have found more likely to be put in seclusion and restraints.
Observers differ on whether to blame racism or more subtle factors, such as class and educational background. Luther Granquist is an attorney with the Minnesota Disability Law Center and a longtime crusader against institutionalization. He says the bureaucracy and limited funding of state programs mean parents have to be skilled and aggressive advocates for their developmentally disabled children.
And many times the persons that are heard the best are those who come from a socioeconomic strata in which they are accustomed to dealing with the powers that be, and they can get a better deal. That's a problem in all of our, I think, social service delivery system.
Social service workers say there's a growing awareness that programs serving minorities need to be tailored to minority cultures. Hennepin County will now set up a group home, for example, designed to serve four mentally retarded black men and staff it with African-American workers. Officials say that makes it more likely that the men will do well in the group home and won't have to be sent to a state hospital. Ella Gross used to be an advocate for the nonprofit Arc of Hennepin County. She says she was so struck by the shortage of services for minorities that she started her own organization. The Institute for Minority Services in Minnesota contracts with Hennepin County to serve disabled minorities in the system. Gross says it's an uphill battle to convince poor black families that they have a right to the same services white people get.
One of the things that I used to always say, or I still say to my parents, make sure that you think about this as if you were a white person. What would you want? Don't think of yourself coming in from the back door as an African American, that you don't deserve it.
State Senator Linda Berglund says she intends to meet with state officials and may write legislation to address the disparate treatment of minorities with disabilities. I'm John Biewen, Minnesota Public Radio News.